Tony from Shelton. Tony, how are you? What's up?
How are you?
Not bad for an old guy. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Well, I am an old guy, and I am an avid pickleball player. How's that?
How old are you? And tell me what pickleball is. What's the appeal, and should I be playing it? That's what I really want to know.
Pickleball was a game that was invented about 60 years ago for some people that had limited space on an island out off the coast of the state of Washington. It's played on a court that's probably about 40% of the length and width of a full-size doubles tennis court.
Wow.
There's a lot of reasons why it's popular. First of all, it, like some other sports, unlike golf, doesn't cost any money to play. You can buy a great racket for $100. It's kind of easy on the joints, but I think the overall appeal is that if you're an intermediate or advanced tennis player and you're a man and you're trying to play an intermediate or advanced woman tennis player, you're probably going to overwhelm the female opponent. One of the reasons why I think pickleball got so popular is it's a great mixed double sport. In fact, most of the good women players are just as good as the men and can compete.
Well, why is that? Does it appeal to a different skill set?
Norm, at least up until now, and I say up until now because, as you know, everything evolves. It wasn't really a power game. There's three or four aspects to the game. One is playing up close to the what they call the non-volley zone. Again, the court is shorter. But I think there's a lot of reasons. But what's starting to happen now is it's caught fire with the younger generation. And frankly, now to be a better player, you got to be able to return a 100-mile-an-hour serve.
So, well, good luck with
what's
that.
Interesting, what's interesting, if you play enough, you learn that, you know, you can do it. It's a solid paddle played with a ball that looks like a wiffle ball.
It's not like a tennis racket, like a taut
net. It's more like a ping pong paddle.
All right. And the ball, describe the ball again.
The ball looks like a wiffle ball, basically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a plastic ball with holes. The other thing is, for whatever reason, pickleball players seem to be very amenable, unlike maybe some golfers or even some tennis players, of getting together and playing with people at any level and teaching the skills to newer players. Now, there are games that, you know, if you're a new player, when you show up at the court, you probably don't want to get involved in because you're not going to be able to compete, and that's no fun for anyone. But there's a lot of reasons, but I think it's overwhelming tennis. And
now,
the other
Tony,
thing is you can build three pickleball courts on the court it takes, on the space it takes to, you know, put up one tennis court.
Now, here's what you haven't told us, Tony. And I don't mean to embarrass you on the radio.
No.
But basically, you're an inveterate flirt. That's the inference I've drawn. I've asked your age. You delicately sidestepped that. But what you said is you get to meet more women, and you get to play around with more women than you could playing tennis. And, you know, I can understand
That's not really, really the way I meant it. But
I know. I'm just making fun.
It's a great mixed doubles game. It's a lot of fun.
Where do you play?
I actually play in Trumbull at Unity Park, right on White Plains Road. They converted some tennis courts. The town spent a lot of money. They converted some tennis courts to pickleball courts, and the town of Trumbull is about to open about three more.
Wow. Are there leagues and so forth?
Oh, yeah. No, there's leagues. There's professional level. There's tournaments. There's professional pickleball.
How much money can you make playing pickleball? I'm always looking around for
We're in the early stages, but I'll bet you if you could win three or four tournaments a year, you can make a real good living.
Not as much as a good criminal
lawyer from New Haven, but you know, you can make a living and have some fun.
Well, if I knew any good criminal lawyers from New Haven, I'd find out what they made.
Yeah, I tell people, in some respects, it's like golf. If you go out and play golf twice, you can get out there and score 140 and maybe get some exercise. But if you want to be a 5 handicap, you know, you really got to work at it. Pickleball has evolved the same way. You know, if you have any athletic ability at all, if you get out there, you can be in the hunt after playing two or three times. Now, If you want to be competitive, that's another whole story.
All right. Well, listen, thanks, Tony.
Here's some code language. You got to learn what a third shot drop is. You got to learn how to dink. But you ought to come out, introduce yourself, and we'll put you on the court.
It sounds like fun. Where do I go again? Where do you play? Give me the coordinates one more time.
There's Eisenhower Park in Milford has a tremendous facility. Unity Park in Trumbull has six courts right on White Plains Road. This morning, even in this heat, there was 75 people there.
Good.
You know,
grief.
Most of them 50 and older at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Wow. All right. Well, listen, thank you for the tips.
By the way, on another aside, I appreciate your objective opinions on the other things that are more important in the world that you talk about.
Thank you.
I think you do a great job.
No, thanks. I'm trying. I headed out with a client this morning who said, knows I've got the radio show, and said, well, do you have enough time to represent me and do the show? And I said, well, I do. If I didn't have enough time, I wouldn't do the show. But I think all of us need to be engaged with the world around us. And he said, aren't you spending a lot of time preparing for the show? And I'm like, not really. I read the papers in the morning. And now, instead of just keeping it in the back of my mind and BSing with people at the coffee shop, I make a list, in the 5-10 minutes before the show. And then I just kind of start talking and see what happens. And when I get calls from folks like you, it makes it easy. So thank you, Tony. I'll try to keep at it. I appreciate your support.
I hope to
see you on the pickleball court. All right.
Bye-bye.
And I'm not kidding about that pickleball thing. I want to talk to Kyle from Stratford, who I'm told is a female pickleball teacher. Kyle, may I become your student?
Yes, of course. I teach high school kids. I teach phys ed. But let me tell you something. Pickleball, it has got to be the favorite out of non-athletic, athletic children. I mean, we all know there's children that just don't like athletics, but they have great success with it because it's a low skill game. And over time you develop these little tiny skills that some children can make you run around the court like a crazy person trying to return their serve, and they do very little effort.
But can you get a good workout doing it?
You strategize. There's pivoting and great hand-eye coordination. You get a fantastic workout, and success.
Because I'm a cardiovascular nut. I have a high-stress primary occupation, which is trial lawyer, and so my view is, I've got to stay fit to compete. And years ago, as a young man, I was a distance runner. I used to keep my pulse like in the low 40s. If it got higher than that, I knew I needed a day off. Now I'm letting myself go. I'm old, but if I go out, I want to make my heart work. So am I going to get a good workout running around?
Oh my goodness! Yes, the answer is yes. And when I say it's of all levels, and the gentleman who spoke before, it is so true. So I compete with top athlete men. I compete with teenagers, young adults, and there's senior citizens that are 70 years old that are out there that put me to shame. And my heart rate is probably for 60 minutes. I have to walk off the court. I'm exhausted.
Wow. All right. Yeah, so how do you get us started, pickleball?
So here's the thing. I'm traditional. I'm old school. I have a wood paddle. I walk on the court with the wood paddle, and everybody gives me a chuckle. And, let me tell you, it's not about the equipment, but it's fun. The wood paddle makes a fun, knocking sound, and the kids get a kick out of it, too. You could go out and spend $100 on a professional paddle. It's the same thing with golf. I play golf. You could have a brand-new set of Callaways. It's not in the equipment. It's in the athlete. So get yourself a $20 paddle off the internet. The balls they're kind of like a wiffle ball, but they have pinholes. So there's multi different pinholes for
trajectory. Do they bounce a lot or what?
Yeah. Yeah. So in the game of pickleball, you more than likely want the ball to bounce unless you hit, an ace, which is where you just smash it right to the other side. It's unreturnable. The thing is with pickleball, it's so much fun. I play. There's actually the courts in Stratford at Bunnell High School and Flood Middle School have been lined, and it's a cross between ping pong, badminton, tennis, and it requires skill over time. And again, it's such a social thing. If you want to meet people and have fun of all generations, I'm telling you, the senior citizen population plays because they can't play in too many other sports that require long distance running, but they get their heart pumping.
All right, well, that's good news. All right, I will. Well, watch for some rickety geriatric hippie, a.k.a. moi, with hair down the middle of his back and a little more weight than he's proud of. But I will be waddling my way onto a pickleball court sometime before the end of the summer. So get the paddle online, get the ball online. Is there a rule book, too? I mean, how complicated a game is it?
And here's the thing. You can walk on the court never knowing a rule, and the people there have always open-armed. They just, it's not, I mean, you could be in the competitive game. Don't get me wrong. You could step right on a court and say, listen, I want to play competitive, and whoop, everybody plays their A game. That's where you're going to get your workout. But when you step on, everybody, you know, dummies down their game, and they welcome you, and they will teach you the rules as you go, and there's not a lot of rules.
All right, where do you play, Kyle?
I play in Stratford, but I mostly play with the teenagers, you know, when we play at school, during school. But
All right. Well, I'm not volunteering to go back to high school. Those were some of the worst years of my life. But you will see me on a pickleball court. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you so much for your information.
So, please do it. And I encourage a lot of people to do it. And it's a great activity where, you know, we're getting older. I'm in my 50s, and it's a great activity.
Oh, you child, you. I remember my 50s. I remember them fondly, I think. You know, you'll get a chuckle out of this, you know, age and memory. So I'm on the phone with some adversaries yesterday, and we're negotiating about dates by which something has to occur. And those dates are going to be in early September. And I say, that doesn't give us nearly enough time. And the guy says, what are you talking about? That's like 5 weeks from now. I forgot about August. I was planning for September like it was next week. So that tells you where my mind is at. I'm on my way back home getting ready to work. Thank you. Thank you, Kyle.
So let's go. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, my pleasure. Call anytime. I don't know how many of you listen to Joe Rogan. I listened to him for the first time this year. It is the case for me often that I come upon someone in this late phase of my life who's been around for decades. I don't know where I've been my whole life. You know, honestly, I don't. I've been working, I guess, and every now and then I pull my head up out of the sand, take a sniff over the world around me, and think, my goodness, look at all this stuff. So Joe Rogan, he's got a 10-year contract with Spotify for his podcast. Guess what he gets paid for that? No, it's not a 10-year contract. I see I'm wrong. It's a 2-year contract. He gets paid $200 million a year for Spotify to have exclusive rights to his podcast. That's almost as much as I'm getting paid for this show. So, I mean, you know, Joe is doing pretty well, right? $200 million a year for exclusive rights to his show. So I'm thinking Joe's got something going on. He's a comedian, he's a mixed martial arts guy, and he's one of these, you know, rock knockabout kind of guys who uses D's and Dems and Do's, and he'll talk to anybody about anything. And he has yet acquired an outsized influence in the world of social media, including attacks on him for what he said. So I mentioned earlier in the week talking about Joe's having to take certain of his Spotify episodes offline because they contain the N-word. And, of course, this led people to conclude that he should be banned from Spotify. And if anything, it just attracted him more listeners. So Joe is in trouble again. His podcast is called The Joe Rogan Experience. The Joe Rogan, R-O-G-A-N. Dorothy, I know that you're listening. Go get that pen. R-O-G-A-N, Andy and Shelton. You got it, buddy. The Joe Rogan Experience. And so he was online with another comedian, a guy named Tom Segura. And, this is as reported, I think, in the Daily Beast. I can't quite tell here. And they're smoking cigars and discussing the problem of homelessness in Los Angeles. You know, homelessness is a huge problem. And there used to be a fellow in New Haven, right off of Route 63, I think it was, outside a car wash. And he had placed his tent there on the sidewalk. And I'd drive by from time to time wondering what would become of him in the long run. And then he was gone. I don't know where he is now. But where do people go when they don't have a home? They don't stop being people. But they, what they become is very inconvenient to the rest of us because we are struggling to make our mortgages or our rents, struggling to meet our commitments. And here are these folks who even lack the ability to make the minimum payments that we do. And they remind us of how vulnerable we all are. They're not something we want to see. They're not something that we as individuals have the capacity to do much about. Sure, take a homeless person into your house and give them the spare bedroom. Next day you'll see another person and you'll run out of room. And sometimes we run out of compassion and we run out of energy. And cities can turn mean. Segura and Rogan were discussing the problem of homelessness in Los Angeles when an exchange took place that has the internet buzzing. But first, I mention her name, and there she is, Dorothy from Fairfield. How are you, young lady?
How are you today?
Not bad, I think, you know.
Well,
cool.
I'm listening, and when Allison was in law school, she was in San Diego. And the first day that I spent like about a week or two with her, anyway, she said, Mom, we're going to go for coffee, but you're not going to be prepared for what you're going to see. And what she was telling me is that there were homeless people living on the sidewalks, sleeping on the sidewalks. Came back to Bridgeport, Connecticut, and I was aware that there's this shopping center, very nice. And it was a homeless man. He put his tent right by a source of water, like a, it was a tributary to one of our rivers here. Anyway, he lived like that. I and a lot of people would give him food occasionally. The reason I tell the story is just what you said. All of a sudden, we had an extremely bad winter when we had that 36 inches of snow, and the mayor decided that he wouldn't, he didn't realize it was going to be 36 inches of snow, but he didn't have the plows out all night. Anyway, that was the end of his encampment. Where'd behind a shopping center. I hope and pray to God that the police found him, please God, temporary shelter. But he was always part of the community in that way.
Could
that,
you tell from interacting with him whether he had a mental health problem?
I think he was a veteran. Definitely mental health and alcoholism.
Mm. So, you know, this raises an interesting question. And I'll put it dramatically, but I want to see where we go with this. Are we our brother's keeper? You know, we've talked about this some a month or so ago when I posed a question to people. What do you do with the panhandler at the end of the highway?
Yep.
Do you give or not?
I can tell you from my own personal experience that I worked at St. Vincent's. I took the job. Nobody knew I was 65. And I remember seeing this man.
You're not 65. Come on.
I'm 79.
You liar, pickleball paddle on fire. Wasn't that you out at the pickleball courts I saw you the other day? You know.
My parents had very, very young genes, and I can pass for at least 10 years younger than I am. So, but what I want to tell you about St. Anne's is there was this man. He would come, and when I would get my coffee, he was always sitting in the lobby. So one day I did offer him, I said, can I get you a cup of coffee? And he said, that would be wonderful. And so I asked somebody, I said, what's his story? And they said, he's homeless, Dottie. And what happened out in Fairfield when I was a realtor, there was a man who used to sit on a bench outside St. Thomas's Cemetery, or inside, I guess. And I was a realtor. And again, I guess I'm more alert or what. I saw him every day. Guess what we did? We realtors, we all got together and started Operation Hope. Hmm. And it even became a shelter for women who, there was a one part of it was for homeless, and the other part was for women in our community who needed shelter with their children. And, you know, Fairfield's a fairly affluent, it's not like Westport or Greenwich, but I was shocked. I was shocked that there were homeless people. And I was shocked.
I think there are far more of them than we know. And as
exactly.
The economy transforms.
Exactly.
But, you know, I mean, what are we? And you know, I don't know if you listened yesterday. We had Rex Paris on, the mayor of Lancaster, California.
I didn't get a chance to listen yesterday. No.
Lancaster, California is part of Los Angeles County. He's mayor there, and he's very attuned to population changes in his community, and as he is to climate change. And he said, "Look, here's the deal in Central America. Those countries are becoming unlivable because of climate change and forcing mass population migration. And his view is that we will have as many as 400 million people stream in or attempt to stream into the country in the next 10 to 15 years. I don't know where we're going to put all those people. And I get scared about that, and I get threatened about it, and I'm talking about it here just to try to find a sensible response. Let's talk more after the break. I don't know if you want to stick around, Dorothy. If
sure,
not, thanks
I'll
for calling.
Around.
You're listening to WICC 600 AM, 107.3 FM, WICC600.com if you're live streaming. So I was starting to, I had begun this topic, the topic we're now talking about homelessness and what our obligations are to the homeless. I wanted to talk about some dark humor of Joe Rogan's, and I'll get to it eventually. But we've ended up in a broader discussion about what, you know, are we our brother's keepers? What do we owe to the homeless? And Dorothy called in, Dorothy from Fairfield, not from Kansas, you know, to talk about an experience she had with her daughter in San Diego and then how it opened her eyes returning to Connecticut to see the homeless among us. And I was raising questions about whether the folks that Dorothy encountered had mental illness, apparent mental illness. And you know, so we were tossing that ball back and forth. Ball's in your court. Where, you know.
Okay. Norm, do you remember when in Newtown we had housing, we had a hospital. And I think it was Lisa Wexler, Judge Wexler and I were talking that on air one time. We don't have these facilities anymore. And the gentleman that I mentioned to you, he would have definitely been there. Definitely.
So, and the reason we don't, you know, it's in the 60s and 70s, I believe, that I've got the decades correct. You get to a certain age and they all blur together.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
but
even the not, 50s.
In the not too recent past, we had a program or a set of policy initiatives in the United States known as deinstitutionalization. And this occurred largely at about the time that psychotropic medication was recognized as efficacious and available to be distributed on a broad basis. And the thinking was that we had warehoused or housed the mentally ill, those incapable mm-hmm. of caring for themselves, in institutions where they were sometimes treated cruelly and they didn't have the full ability to develop their capacities. We made a promise to them as a society. We would provide them with psychotropic medications and adequate community support so that they could enjoy the best possible versions of themselves. And then we walked away from that commitment.
Exactly.
We never provided the community support, and we haven't societied up or manned up or womened up or whatever, itted up, whatever gender you're supposed to use mm-hmm. these days for general things, and reopened those doors. And, you know, it's funny you should mention the Newtown facility. I was thinking about institutions and when you mentioned it. You know, come mm-hmm. winter, where are you going to go, you know?
Norm, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I am. They need housing. It's one thing to give them drugs. They need housing.
Yeah, no,
and
didn't.
In Fairfield, I went to a fundraiser. It was wonderful. St. Thomas Church. You wouldn't believe how many people were there. Anyway, a lot of churches in the area. There are people, Norm, that we need to help, and this is how we help them. They can afford, one way or another, either they get the state help or they have the money themselves for some housing. But they don't have first month, last month, or they don't have, after they get the money together, because they've been homeless, they don't have furniture. So there is a group, I'm trying to remember what the name of the group was, but basically it was all the money that we raised that night out at in Fairfield, it all went to help with that first month, last month. I can tell you as a realtor, former realtor, retired realtor, that if you don't have that first month, last month, you're not going to get an apartment.
Yeah,
and in
right.
Bridgeport, in the paper years ago, it said, if you didn't have a combined income or a single income of $60,000, you cannot rent in Bridgeport. I know that it was true then. It's even more critical now. You have to have a lot more than $60,000.
That's a lot of money.
A one-bedroom is 700 square feet, $1,500. $1,500
wow.
for a one-bedroom in the north end of Bridgeport. Near Sacred Heart University.
All right. Well, thanks for these tips, Dorothy. Thanks for
God
shedding
bless
a light
you.
On this. God bless
God
you
bless.
Too. Be well. So let's go
you
back
too.
To this. Let's go back to Joe Rogan. So he's on the Joe Rogan Experience on Spotify, and they're noodling away comics do. And they start to talk about the problem of homelessness in Los Angeles. And there are a great number of encampments in the city, that is, places where homeless people find one another and begin to create small communities. Those communities can be very disruptive to those who have conventional homes. And so Segura says, when you see stuff like that on the streets, at least in Los Angeles or California, that's protected property. Like by law, that's the person's property by law. Rogan responded, oh, a homeless person's property is protected? Segura, absolutely. If you were to try to move that or take that, Rogan interjected, you'd get arrested. Hilarious, Rogan said. But they wouldn't arrest you if you shot somebody. Maybe you should just go shoot the homeless people. I like your idea, Segura said. And if, you know, now, does that, the Twitterverse and the social media universe responded by once again attacking Rogan and calling for him to be banned. I don't think that he should be banned. I don't take this as a sign that Joe Rogan was calling for the murder of homeless people. I think if you can listen to that exchange and think that's what Rogan was doing, you're a half-wit who's probably one step from being homeless yourself. I mean, he was noting the fact that in an era of defunding, violent crime is up in the cities because police officers are often afraid to do anything about it for fear that their motives will be called into question. Some cities have relaxed bond requirements even for violent crime, and folks are committing the crime and being released on the street, and people are talking about it. And so Rogan's talking about it. But listen to some of the comments that arose on Twitter. Nothing like a couple of rich F blank K's. That would be folks. They just left the middle letters out. Nothing like a couple of rich folks sitting around smoking cigars and criticizing people at their rock bottom. You know, another says Rogan is outraged that homeless people are offered, you know, are allowed to own things. You know, I don't know. I think that Rogan is like the rest of us. He's confused by a world that doesn't seem quite to work, and he doesn't know what to do. Now, should he be entertaining people with his anxiety? I don't know. But I think the fact that he's got millions of listeners suggests that what he's expressing resonates with others. That's why people get followers on Twitter. What they say strikes a chord in someone else. And Rogan is one of our primary social media influencers. He's telling us something. I wish I knew what he was saying. You know, in talking to Dorothy, I was reminded of the following. Do you remember Occupy Wall Street? Remember that whole movement back after the 2008 financial crash, and government came to the rescue of big banks and financial institutions, but the 99%, that is the rest of us who work for a living, felt a little bit betrayed. And so people took to the streets. You know, we're the 99%. What about us? Where's our relief program? You know, we're not banks. We're not too big to fail. Are we expendable? And these protests, I believe, began in the late fall. I don't remember if it was of 2008 or 2009. I'm getting old, unfortunately. But they resulted on the New Haven Green in the creation of a tent city. Initially, there appeared to be 50 or 60 tents on the green right across from Yale, on that side of the green, away from the federal courthouses. And the city was at first, I guess, tolerant of them. They didn't push the people out of the out of the tents, and they let them stay. And I believe the thinking was that come winter, the elements will push folks out of those tents, and the green will once again be what it always has been, a park. It didn't happen. Sure, the city, the tent city, shrunk some in the winter, and come the thaw, there may have been 30 or 40 tents. I was a lawyer representing that tent city at that point. I was the guy who handled their constitutional litigation. I fought the city for their right to remain present on the green. Irving Pinsky, a lawyer in New Haven, was sort of a boots on the ground guy. And Irving and I would talk a lot about what was going on in the city. And here's what was not reported. Yes, the tent city began as a site of social protest, and the United States Supreme Court has realized that a tent in a park is an expressive activity protected by the First Amendment. I argued that when come spring, when Yale wanted the tent city cleaned in the city and pressured the city to remove it, that this was in violation of the occupants' First Amendment rights. The courts were sympathetic to that claim, but the protest had gone on long enough, and balancing the interest of the public in order against the First Amendment rights of the protesters, they were forced out. But did you know that over the winter, a lot of homeless people joined that city, and that city was rife with problems, robbery, rape, the same sorts of stuff you'd see on the streets of a regular neighborhood. And so I learned then that the problem of homelessness and mental health go hand in hand. A tent city that was begun as a site of protest became a refuge for people with nowhere else to go.